The Holy Gospel for today is taken from Luke chapter 14. Now large crowds were traveling with Jesus, and he turned and said to them, "Whoever comes to me and does not hate father and mother, wife and children, brothers and sisters, yes, even life itself, cannot be my disciple. Whoever does not carry the cross and follow me cannot be my disciple. For which of you, intending to build a tower, does not first sit down and estimate the cost, to see whether he has enough to complete it? Otherwise, when he has laid a foundation and is not able to finish, all who see it will begin to ridicule him, saying, 'This fellow began to build and was not able to finish.' Or what king going out to wage war against another king will not sit down first and consider whether he is able with 10,000 to oppose the one who comes against him with 20,000. If he cannot, then, while the other is still far away, he sends a delegation and asks for the terms of peace. So, therefore, none of you can become my disciple if you do not give up all your possessions." This is the gospel of the Lord.
Thanks be to God.
So, first of all, how many of you remember the name Ian Usher? Anyone remember who he is? You might remember when I tell you about him. He was the man who, in 2008, so that was 8 years ago, put his life up for sale on eBay. Do you remember hearing about him now? He was 44 years old. He lived in Australia, and he was a carpet salesman. And his wife was divorcing him, and he wanted a fresh start. So he put on eBay that he was selling everything. He sold his house, his furnishings, his job, his car, his clothes, his jet ski, his underwater diving, his scuba equipment, his even his friends offered to be part of the deal. How about that? So at one point, it's reported that the bids on eBay topped around $2 million. But in the end, they discovered that not all of those were real bids. And when the eBay auction finally ended and everything was settled, Ian Usher sold his life for $399,300. And he says he walked out the front door with the clothes on his back, his wallet in one pocket, and his passport in the other. And he was ready to start a new life. And he had 100 things that he wanted to do on his bucket list that he finally completed when he was in the torch of the Statue of Liberty on July 4th, and I forget which year that was. But now his life is worth a lot more. Because when I was reading about him and find out what he's doing now, in 2012, he bought his own island in the Caribbean. So, interesting. So, what are our lives worth? What are our lives worth? Well, I've had to ask this question in a very real way. As most of you know, in January of 2015, I had back-to-back concussions. I hit my head at home the first time. It was not really very eventful. I had a bad headache for a couple days. I had a hard time concentrating. But then after about 3 days, you know, I felt okay. 2 weeks later, we were out of town at a popular eating establishment. And I was standing in front of, you know, the soft drink dispensers, and it was really busy. So Grace, our daughter, had a table outside for us, and I sent her a text message saying, you know, what do you want to drink? And I was just standing there, and I kind of bent over to put my phone back in my jeans pocket, and the front cover of that overhead refrigeration unit randomly, I mean, no one was touching the machine, fell and hit me in the same spot on the back of my head. It turns out that two injuries like that, so close together, 2 weeks apart, is not good. Not good at all. There's a compounding effect. Maybe either one of those, kind of on their own, would not have been quite as troublesome as the two of them together. It is 19 months later, and I am still having problems related to that second injury. The way that my brain works is not the same as it was before that happened. I can't multitask. You'll probably notice that about me. It's hard to concentrate. I find that I have to work twice as hard to get less done. And I forget things. I have some memory issues. So when I tell you remind me, I really do mean remind me. I try to write things down. And even when I write things down, sometimes I forget. Sometimes I forget things really that a pastor should not forget. And I know that I have caused some pain and anguish by sometimes forgetting some very important things. And that, my friends, does not feel good. Doesn't feel good for you. It doesn't feel good for me. As a matter of fact, it became downright discouraging when I was released from care of the neurologist, and he basically said, really, there's nothing that we can do for you. You're kind of at that gap of where you're functioning high enough that therapy is not going to help, but you know you're not functioning at the level where you did before. Just keep living life, keep working. That's going to challenge you enough. Well, he was more right than I wanted him to be, you know? And because I knew that time would only tell what healing would still take place. And there has been a lot of healing. But again, I don't feel like I'm where I was. And that is really discouraging. After some significant mistakes of forgetting, I did not find myself in a very good place. As you can imagine, that's hard when you're used to being something, someone, and you're not, you know, that's really hard. I was sad and I was discouraged. I did not ask for that thing to fall on my head. Turns out that when our brains, especially when they're impaired in any kind of way, can convince us of things that are not quite true. I felt myself spiraling downward, which is not a good experience, where I started questioning, should I even be a pastor? Because these are big mistakes. And when a pastor makes, we all make mistakes, right? But when a pastor makes mistakes, sometimes there's that God layer that can really hurt. I questioned myself as a wife, as a mother. I felt like I'm not very fun to be around, a friend. And yes, I questioned my own self-worth. I was dancing on a very fragile line where I didn't want to admit that I was. I was depressed, and I knew that, and I just really was trying to work myself out of it, but I couldn't. And Eric and Pam were wonderful and both talked to me and said, you know, you don't seem like yourself. And I said, you're right. I don't feel like myself. And so I called my doctor, and I sought some medical help. And I love my doctor. She is amazing. If you have a great doctor, thank them, because that makes all the difference in the world. She reminded me of some important things, such as depression is very common when you have head injuries. With brain injuries, that just kind of messes you up, because it's not just the fact that your brain is injured, it changes the way that you think. You know, and there's lots of different things that can do that. Chemical imbalances, you know, do the same thing. I'm happy to say that that is all being managed quite well. And I feel like I'm on the right track and I'm doing all the things that I need to do to be as healthy as possible. Although I do still forget. And I do still say, remind me. And those reminders are wonderful if they come in writing, because then I have something to hang on to. But I do remember the value of life. I remember the value of my life. So why do I tell you all this? I thought of a bunch of reasons why I shouldn't tell you this. Because it's hard. It's hard. And I know not everyone likes to know that their pastor is human. But guess what, folks? We are very human. Very vulnerable. We experience the same things you do. We're people just like you. It's not easy to talk about these things, but I feel like I have to. I have to tell you this because of several reasons. First, just the reality that I do sometimes forget. And you have to know that that doesn't mean I don't care. Because I do. I do. You have to know that. I do. Second, I think that there's a stigma in our culture about depression, and that has to stop. The best way for that to stop is for us to talk about it. Far too many of us try to hide it and try to fight our way through it, and we can't. We can't. We need help. And that silence that we have about depression can just have a devastating impact. It can be deadly. I mean, seriously. I also tell you about this because if you ever find yourself dancing on that fragile line of questioning your self-worth and the value of your life, I urge you to not dance alone. Reach out to somebody. I'm here for you. Eric's here for you. Your church family are here for you. Call your physician. Reach out for help. Do not dance alone. Also, actually, the fact is you don't dance alone. Because I was looking at some statistics. Almost 16 million people in the United States, 16 million people suffer from depression. 50% of those people, not even of those 16 million, those are ones that are documented. 50% of people who suffer from depression don't ever seek treatment. Some other statistics, 10%, that's 1 out of 10 adults age 65 or older, suffer from depression. 30% of our college students, that's 3 out of 10, can identify that at some point during their college education, they have suffered depression that has negatively impacted their studies and their life. 11% of adolescents, before they reach the age of 18, have experienced depression. 17% of people in their lifetime. And again, these are numbers that only relate to those that have been documented. So be encouraged, be urged, be commanded by me right now that if you are concerned about someone, about their well-being, about how they're doing, if they might be dancing on that fragile line of questioning their self-worth, reach out to them. Because our lives are worth too much to not reach out. Our worth and our value does not depend on what we have or even how we feel about ourselves. Because we can convince ourselves of things that are simply not true. Our worth and our value comes from the fact that we are loved and forgiven children of God. Children, yes, who sometimes get discouraged. Children who sometimes make mistakes. Children who sometimes hurt each other. Children who need each other so that we can remember who we are. The things that Jesus valued the most in life were not things at all. They were people. Things just get in the way of what he valued the most. Jesus valued people. He values us. He values you, and he values me. People who aren't even here, people who might not ever come here. He didn't even want people, our primary relationships, parents, spouses, children, to stand in the way of us loving people. I think that when Jesus tells us to carry our cross, it doesn't mean that we need to look for difficult things in life to bear. Not at all, because those difficult things come to us. That is life itself. And I think it means that he knows life is hard, and that we need to look to him in the midst of those difficult things that we bear. Because we can't do it alone. And we shouldn't. That's not how God created us to be. We need Jesus. And we need each other. Because we are that body of Christ here on this earth today. So we hold that cross high, so that we don't forget who we are, and we never forget that we aren't alone. In this cross of Christ, we have our life and our breath and our very being. We have meaning and we have purpose to value people like Jesus values people, to live lives that give life, that reach out to others, especially those who are vulnerable. Lives of compassion, lives that seek justice for all God's children. Lives that hold out a hand of love to those who dance on that fragile line of questioning their self-worth. Because in this love, we discover that our lives are definitely worth something. Something that goes way beyond ourselves and how we feel or what we have. What it's worth on eBay. No matter what you think about yourself today. No matter what you think about yourself today. You are a loved and forgiven child of God. And for that, we give thanks to God, and I give thanks to you. Amen.